Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about some Andre Drummond updates. That we were going to do three chapters of the book club. We're just going to do one this week at the end of the show, but there's so much Andre Drummond stuff that came out on Wednesday that we are going to dive into it. That includes a piece Evan wrote about Andre Drummond. So that's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Animaniacs, the reboot, just dropped its trailer for Hulu. It comes out November 20th, and that was like one of my favorite shows as a kid, so it looks fun. I'm excited to have it back, and you know, I'm usually overly critical of soft reboots or reboots or remember X, Y, or Z because Stranger Things kind of started that and I saw the trend coming and it's still annoying that it's still a thing like this many years later, but I'm excited for it. But I'm all right, all things considered. How are you?
Doing good. You know, as you know, I'm deep into Breath of the Wild, like it's 2017.
Breath of the Chris Child, I don't know. It's Breath of the Wild's a masterpiece. We talk about it a lot whenever you're playing it. Like, for those of you listening, it's my all-time favorite game. And if you join the Locked On Cavs Discord server, link is on our Twitter page, my Twitter page, Chris's Twitter page, and on Fear the Sword. You're free to join, talk Breath of the Wild, Cavs, anything. And it's been a pretty fun community so far, where we just bully one guy named Joe, who's a good friend of mine, and it's just a grand old time. Thanks for buying Built Bars, Joe.
Yeah. Some of the things said in that Discord already, my brain just slowly melted into the sea.
Oh, bless your heart for engaging the political chatter. I muted that mofo as soon as I created it.
I can't tell if some of it's real or some of it's not, and it's concerning.
That's the internet for you.
Yeah, well, you know, regretting it. But if you're listening to us for the first time, I'm Chris Manning. Help run FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cavs Site with Evan. Also do the Ineligible Man Downfield Newsletter with Jordan Zerm. And you can find my writing at places like Cleveland Magazine and Forbes. Evan, tell everyone your bio real quick.
I run the show and the sword, I guess, at Fear the Sword with Chris. We do Locked On Cavs 5 days a week together. You can find my other work at Forbes Sports Online Sports section, where I talk about the Cavs and the NBA as a whole. And we're actually going to discuss, as a segue into it, there's a lot of chatter about Andre Drummond, so I kind of did some cursory searching around the league. I spoke to executives, this is on the record now, that are not directly linked to the Cavs. Some in the West, some in the East, just to kind of get a gauge of what is really going on from an outsider's perspective on Andre Drummond. And I have an idea of what's going on inside, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on the show at this point, so kind of wanted to get a feel of how the rest of the league is feeling. And Chris, I don't think Andre Drummond is going to be long for Cleveland if I was a betting man.
Yeah, so let's start with the Q&A. He did a Q&A that is somewhat
we're gonna do that first. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I want to get this out of the way because I want to bring like the juju like back around in a positive way for us. This Q&A is wild. And I don't know.
It's odd.
We've talked about this. Access in sports media is weird. It's honestly like people act like these things are state secrets and treat them too seriously. Like, that's weird to me. So Chris Feudor of Cleveland.com did a Q&A with Andre Drummond that was set up not through the Cavs or through like an agency where it's like a basketball interview. It is like an interview about him, his milk sponsorship, and it's like, frankly, like kind of weird how much like advertorial content is in this. Like, there are like multiple embedded tweets about Got Milk, And like basically like the first half of the story is like a press release for this like milk dunk challenge, and that's weird.
Yeah, no, that's the problem with, like you said, access journalism in itself. It's a bit of a problem. It's actually a big problem. I have done interviews in the past where it is through a certain medium or a certain video game where, you know, it's your duty, and if it calls for you, you go for it kind of thing. And credit the Fedor for getting so many Cavs questions in, because when they usually run these shows, they try to zero in on the product you're trying to discuss, and they leave, like, no time for actual, like, sports talk. So credit, I give Chris a lot of credit. Like, he was able to get a few Cavs questions in. Usually for me, it's like a question or two about the Cavs if it's a Cavs player, and like you have to make sure they really count, because they will end the call right after those two.
Yeah, I've had to go both ways with these. Like, once I did this thing with Isaiah Thomas. I think I may have told this story before. And it was, like, for this, like, very niche, like, kids' Foot Locker thing. And, like, the moment I asked one question about...
Oh, was he a model for them?
Oh, God. Okay, I'm breezing by that. he basically just, like, handed the call to the PR person, and it was like, he's not answering those questions. So I did nothing with the interview, because I don't do PR for that. Secondly, I did one with Kevin Love once, back when he was a little more reserved, and it was, like, for, like, a mouthguard company, and actually got, like, a good amount of stuff out of it, and got, like, an update on his health going into his second season in Cleveland. So they can go both ways. They're weird. I don't love them. I on practice now, typically turn them down. I think they can just be weird, and it depends on, like, who it is, and I try to gauge them out before... I would agree to them, but this particular interview, there's a lot going on here.
Your reaction's appropriate.
Number one, I just want to say for the record, I think milk, drinking a glass of milk is weird.
All right. Was I quiet enough? Because I drink milk almost every day.
Look, Evan, this is concerning. I'm just saying oat milk is much superior.
All right, Chris, you little soy boy beta male cuck, why don't you tell me about voting for Bernie Sanders while I drink myself a glass of milk and eat myself a big ass steak, because I'm a red-blooded American. Not really, it just, we weren't allowed to drink pop. It was usually water and milk as a kid, so milk is just kind of fixated in my life.
I just like couldn't tell you the last time I had a glass of milk. I can tell you the last time I had chocolate milk, because it was handed to me after I ran a half marathon, and
that sounds so unpleasant. I remember when I did the
this interview was a really bad decision.
I did the turkey trot a few years ago in Cleveland, and somebody handed me a beer, and the last thing I wanted to drink after running that, because I was in the worst shape of my life, the last thing I wanted to do was drink a Michelob Ultra, which is by far like one of the worst beers you can have to begin with.
It's always the beer they give you after races. It's really concerning.
It's just, but yeah, anyways, no, drinking a milk after a marathon just sounds awful.
It was a really bad decision on my part. I had like a Clif Bar and a chocolate milk and a banana in like 2 minutes. It was just a lot going on. And then I sat in the shade of an Indians game back when we could do that and just didn't move for several hours. This Drummond interview, the stuff that he says about, there's not really anything I feel like of note. I'm going to have to write this up at Fear the Store, and I'm not really looking forward to doing that. But, like, some of the stuff that he says is not, like, anything that he hasn't said before. I think the part that I think is just the most, like, alarming with this is, like, I'm going to read the quote verbatim. The big man is coming back. You look at the perennial bigs, we've got Jokic, Joel Embiid, myself, Porzingis, Nurkic. Go down the list of bigs that are playing really, really well or holding their own in the position. They do a little of everything style is a new evolution of the big men on the court. Here's the problem with Andre Drummond putting himself in that class. Mm-hmm. Nikola Jokic, an all-time great passing big man who can also shoot threes. Joel Embiid, when he's engaged, is like arguably the best defensive center in the NBA. Porzingis, like... pick and pop, more mobile, just more athletic, a little more just kind of a little more spacing. He's been able to shoot for his career. Nurkic is one of the smartest defenders in the NBA and an underrated passer, really bruising. He really uses his size really well. All those guys have like a defining thing or things that really allow them to become a high, high level player. Andre Drummond, like, I don't think has that. And, like, he does, there is stuff he does well, but there is not anything that I feel like there is a thing that he does that is as good as anything those guys do. And putting himself in that class is just, like, like, especially when you're saying, like, do it your everything big men, and then he later talks about dribbling and shooting, I'm just like, you don't understand this then. Like, it is not, like, a thing where, like, you do this, and therefore, like, it makes you more valuable. It is you have to do it at an acceptable level, and, like, he's never going to do that stuff at an acceptable level. There's nothing about him as a shooter that is ever going to be him being able to shoot threes. It is just not going to happen. There's just no way that I believe that it is a realistic outcome for him. And for him to, like, if this is, like, an actual thing in his head and that he's, like, this is going to be part of my game, I don't know how you can get him to not do it, but the Cavs have to try.
You know, they do say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery that mediocrity can pay greatness to. Yeah, Drummond trying to say that he is modernizing his game is laughable. Maybe to peek into my story and the next segment, one scout told me from an Eastern Conference team, I didn't specify that in the story, but I will now, but here's what he told me. He said, it makes sense why Drummond is trying to add so much to his game given the current state of the NBA, but he also is trying to do it 8 years in. The league has him figured out, and it feels like it's a case of too little, too late. And I think that's an apt quote about Andre Drummond, and a lot of Pistons fans were in my mentions saying, like, yeah, no, that's exactly how I felt about Andre, and a lot of more notorious Pistons writers were also saying the same thing about Andre as well, and, yeah, no, to put him in the same echelon as a Nikola Jokic, and even, like, a Brook Lopez, who is an all-defensive caliber center, who is the perfect example of a drop coverage big if you wanted to copy and paste that template onto another team in terms of, and also as a spacing big as well. Like, Andre is none of those. And like you said, he does have some things he's really good at, but he doesn't like to play to those strengths. He doesn't like to play to the fact that he is a traditional big man that is an elite, possibly great of all time rebounders. And if you look at his statistics, like, he's not Dennis Rodman good, but Andre Drummond can gobble up some boards. And like, defensively, he was solid at times with Detroit. Maybe he can find a modicum of that with Cleveland under J.P. Bickerstaff. Who knows? But it's just frustrating because Andre Drummond should know what he is, but he's trying to be everything that he's not. And it's just a little disappointing because I'm like onion rings with having him in Cleveland. And I think, you know, shout out to Hiram, because I know you're going to listen to this at some point. Hiram's going to be in our mentions again talking about how we hate Andre Drummond. I don't hate Andre Drummond as a player or as a person. I think he's a fun player. I just don't think he's a good fit for this Cavs squad. I think he'd be really good for a contender where his impact can be minimized, because right now he has carte blanche to do whatever he wants on both ends of the floor, and it's mostly detrimental to what the Cavs are trying to build.
Andre Drummond could modernize his game, but it is not in the ways he's describing doing. It is, if he wanted to actually modernize his game, it should be lobs, it should be minimal post-ups, it should be trying on defense, it should be doing some of the stuff that he can do better. And even if you wanted to get back to him passing from the elbow and being a creator a little bit, like, and even if that involves a little bit of dribbling, like, I can see that being the evolution he can make. The shooting is just like the biggest red flag possible. But Evan, let's take a quick
every
break
time
here.
Andre Drummond attempts a three-pointer, it's as bad as a turnover. That's all I'm going to say.
100% agree. Even from the corner, I just don't like believe that. Like, and this isn't because like I think players can't improve or anything like that. It's just like there's a historical correlation to like free throw shooting and being able to shoot three-pointers, and Andre Drummond is one of the worst three-point shooters in the NBA.
Yeah,
he was an awful free throw shooter in college. Like, there's just not like a template for, there's not a historical precedent for a guy being 8 years into his career with this being this bad of a free throw shooter and then making this jump. This is not like a Channing Frye evolution. This is just like a weird chance to try and invent yourself. But Evan, why don't you tell everyone about a great sponsor of today's show?
Well, if Andre Drummond is looking to improve his craft, maybe he could use a little help from our friends at Bilko. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it every day with Bilko. It's easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages. You can put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, you can put it in your golf bag to power through the back nine, or you can put it in your pocket to get through the day. Bilko is the best workout gel on the market. It's a 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling, plus it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a Monster energy drink with a third of the caffeine and better results and a better taste because Monster is garbage. It comes in three delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. How you know what, listeners, you're probably wondering, and Chris as well, how does Bilko work so well? Bilko combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into my system fast, plus it's easy on my stomach. Collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better, and for me, that I had to take a lot of Bilko to make that happen. Bilko is loaded with the good stuff to ignite my work. It has beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. It also has B6, B12, which is actually 10,000. Can you believe that? 10,000% of your daily percentage in needs. So, if you're interested in Bilko, visit Bilko.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at Bilko.com. Let's go.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. All right, Evan, let's dive into your story about Andre Drummond and what the Cavs shoot from this offseason. I guess, like, we'll link to this in the show notes. Please go read it and check it out. But for you,
Give me the credit I crave.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, this is a really well-done piece. But give me your takeaways from this piece and reporting this piece out.
Well, like I was talking about in the beginning, Chris Fedor initially reported, and he kind of put it into writing while you and I have been discussing it for a while on here, that there's like a noticeable gap and gulf between Andre Drummond and the Cavs in terms of a contract extension. You even went on to share that it's uncomfortable, and I've gotten the same vibe from asking around like how it's going, just because Andre is looking for those max dollars, because he realizes, and I think he realizes at least, and I hope he realizes, that he's not going to really get that opportunity elsewhere if he goes on the free market, and he's also not going to get the opportunity that his extension or his player option allows him either. So I spoke with some Cavs folks early on, so I already had information on that, so I'm like, why don't I kind of gauge how the rest of the league is feeling too? And I shared what that one scout said, but one executive from a Western Conference team really gave me something, gave me pause when it came to extending Andre Drummond. He said, the problem is I wouldn't commit that kind of money to him at this time, when in reference to him being eligible for a max extension. I do like what Andre brings to the table in terms of defense and rebounding, but it's all the extracurricular activity and the fact that he hasn't proven he's a winning player that would make it impossible to sell the idea to most owners in the league. Based on the tone of the conversation, Dan Gilbert was one of those owners in that league. And like I said in the first segment, I don't think Andre's going to be here much longer in Cleveland, and I think he's going to be playing for another team, dunking his cookies and milk elsewhere.
I think the quote from about the what he brings to the table in terms of defense and rebounding and the quote-unquote extracurricular activity and the fact that he hasn't proved he's a winning player, I think to me it just, like, says it all. And it's like the defense and rebounding stuff. I would argue that his defensive stuff just, like, isn't really there. Like, I'm of the mind that, like, he's not really a top-level defensive center. Like, he doesn't eat up shots. Like, he doesn't kind of contain in drop coverage the way you'd kind of want him to. So there's definitely some limitations there. Some of that could just be like where he's played and everything like that. Like, you would hope that if he ended up in Boston or ended up somewhere else, like those situations where there's just a better, higher expectation in some ways, and kind of probably more accountability. Like, you might be able to.
Accountability, organizational stability, coaching. There's a lot of, like, I know the Celtics expressed, or they told me they're monitoring the situation where if Andre Drummond really becomes available in trade talks, Boston might try and throw an offer at Cleveland, because Danny Ainge isn't a bad GM. If he sees a talented player that could work for them, he'll throw an offer at them. So I trust my sources a lot more than what other people are saying, and it's somebody who's very close to the Celtics in this situation. So I think Drummond would be a really good fit in Boston, because his, like I said in the last segment, his impact would be minimized in Boston, where he isn't given carte blanche to do whatever he wants on offense and defense. Like, if he goes to a Boston or San Antonio or the Clippers or any playoff caliber team or roster or organization, like, they're going to pack Drummond into a box where it shows that this is his role, this is what you're going to do for us. You can sometimes maybe do these things if a coach is willing to be flexible with just Andre freelancing, but they're going to discourage it, unlike Detroit and Cleveland have. And that's just kind of where I got the vibe from everything.
I think I guess, like, you would hope that with Bickerstaff, the Cavs could you know, kind of get him to do that kind of stuff. But I just, like, don't know if that's, like, the case.
Yeah, that's the problem, because JB has been asked about it before, where they're, like, just straight up asking him. It was when we were still able to actually be at games. That's how long it's been. They asked him, like, how do you feel about Andre taking threes? And it was a question in camp, I believe, as well, or maybe even the pre-camp, when, like, I've had discussions with him. It's it all kind of blurs together after a while, because JB has more or less said, like, okay, if Andre wants to do these things, we'll encourage it and we'll work it into our game plan, but, like, we want him to play to his strengths as well, which is, like, the most not answer ever. But I think it's just JB also trying to be a player's coach and not trying to diminish an all-star caliber player that Cleveland just brought in. So I don't know, maybe this camp is a little different. Maybe this, well, Dre wasn't there, but in their virtual sessions they say, hey, we need you to rebound, play defense, and maybe every now and then you can shoot a three or bring the ball up, but not as much, because Cleveland was a bit of a mess last year after, during Bayline and after Bayline. So I don't know, maybe JV's identity will be a little different this time around. But big shoots and shout outs to our upcoming episode on Monday with Kendon. Yeah, no, if Andre is continued to give, like, free reign to do whatever he wants, like, this is a dark timeline for the Cavs to be heading down.
Yeah, it's, there's definitely some ilk kind of wondering, like, what you kind of do with him and what you can kind of do. I'm, like, looking at, I'm trying to do, like, sign and trade with him now, and, like, the Spurs one would be fun, because if you could, I think Jakob Poeltl is just, like, would be a much more interesting center.
Who else would you get with Jakob Poeltl?
Well, that's the problem, like, the money, or, like, if you sign and traded him and you gave him, like $10 million a year and multi-year contract, sign and trade, like the money going back to San Antonio, you'd have to find a way for them to, like, reroute Rudy Gay somewhere or something like that. Like, that's kind of one of the things you're kind of doing. Like, they would have to have a money going out to kind of make that work, and that's not exactly, like, the easiest thing to do. So it's, I'm not, these things are on the fly. These things are imperfect. I think, and look, I just think max money for a center can be really harmful. And I don't know if Drummond's getting that anywhere. And I think that I really wonder what his next contract ultimately looks like. I just don't know, but I can't imagine it is, like, not going to be, I cannot imagine it is going to be, like, a clean thing.
Maybe he won't get a Zubac contract, but if he gambles on himself, the Cavs are unable to trade him, and he hits the open market next year, I think, like, a 4-year, 9 or 10 million deal is what Andre's going to be facing. And, like, maybe he gets a little bit more just because he is a former All-Star. Maybe he does get a little bit of leeway just because of his age and everything else. Maybe there's a team that believes in him, but I don't know. Andre's not playing to his strength, which is a rim-rolling, rebounding, competent defensive center, and it's frustrating.
The Cavs could use a guy like that.
If they got the theoretical Andre Drummond of him playing to his strengths, I think every team in the league would want that. Like, a massive center that, I mean, he's a liability at the free throw line, but whatever, like, rebounding and defensively, like, he's able to do that. Like, last year's Clippers team, if you put Andre Drummond in that situation, I wonder if Doc Rivers doesn't let him get cute like JB and maybe Dwayne Casey / Stan Van Gundy / insert every Pistons coach before Stan Van Gundy here. Like, let him get cute with things. And, he'd be really good on a contending squad. Like, that's my thing. Like, if you put Andre Drummond on a contending squad, he's awesome. If you put him on a bad squad like Cleveland, who is still trying to figure themselves out, he just does more harm than good. And that's where I get frustrated.
I'm checking to see if this works right now to tell you, because I think I have a...
I'll stall for you, don't worry.
I don't think there's, like, just even a thing out there that is exactly perfect for all of this. The closest that I came for this, in terms of a structure of a deal, is Cavs get Jakob Poeltl. Rudy Gay goes to Golden State, Drummond goes to San Antonio, and then I think the Cavs probably grease the wheels of picks. I was trying to, like Exum sending somewhere, like Jetty going somewhere, just because of the contract and how cheap it is. I think you could do that. I don't think Jetty's, like, untouchable by any means.
No.
Jakob would be, like, a really good, I think, like, centerpiece, good cost-controlled center for what the Cavs are kind of trying to do. So I think something like that could make some sense. It just I wonder how much the Cavs kind of need to grease the wheels. And I, frankly, I don't think they should be willing to grease their wheels too much, because, like, if you end up having to – if you acquire Andre Drummond for nothing and then you have to grease the wheels more than that to, like, move on from him, that's just – that's bad.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. And getting a player like Jakob Poeltl will be a good starting position for the Cavs. I like Jakob Poeltl a lot, and he's relative in age to Andre. But, yeah, I feel like just in terms – God, he's been in the league since 2013. I never would have guessed that. Well, no, he hasn't. He's been in the league since 2016. He's been playing professionally since 2013. Either way, getting a Jakob Poeltl type player would be really good for the Cavs in terms of flipping Andre, because you're able to get a center that can fit into the foundation and, you know, doesn't try to play above what his expected role is, and that's a huge thing for what the Cavs are trying to do. But to your point about Jetty, I don't want to say he's readily available, but after this season, once we kind of really, I think this year is like the final year where we have like a good idea what type of player Jetty Osman is, and if it's still kind of like, he's a good 6th, 7th, 8th man on your bench as a wing, maybe the Cavs try to flip him at his crazy cheap contract for some more assets. But just because they have Dylan Windler and Kevin Porter Jr. kind of waiting to take over things as well, so it's just an interesting era of Cavs basketball. But yeah, no, the Cavs shouldn't really be trying to grease the wheels for Andre Drummond, because teams will be operating at minimal capacity this year, and that was really gross that I stifled on the mic, but the teams will be looking to save money long term at least, and Andre presents an opportunity to have like $27.8 million expiring. That's a decent amount of cash that a team could offload on Cleveland, and I know they're not trying to do salary dumps in Cleveland right now, but maybe with Andre, you kind of have to explore that avenue.
Whew. Wouldn't have done the trade. Okay, to one last break. We're going to do a quick book club segment right after this.
Hey, before we start, what chapter?
11.
Okay. I should start earmarking these, but I don't want to ruin this book.
It's okay. All right. Chris, cut here. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs.
Sure.
I'm Chris Manning. He's Evan Damerl. Evan, this is a let's do a quick Chapter 11 dive, because we're running a little short on time here. So all of the information in this chapter, it's the Rashard Lewis, Corleone Young, Al Harrington chapter, all really interesting stories that I think are illuminating for the draft process. You know, Rashard falling and seemingly the Rockets telling him that, you know, he was going to get one of their three picks, and then he just keeps sliding and sliding and sliding while he's in the green room. Corleone Young going all in a lot of ways, and then just not being viewed at all seriously because he's a second-round pick. And then Al Harrington ends up in a veteran team. And I think for all these guys, these situations all, like, can inform where you go and, like, how this process can kind of work for really young players that are coming into the league. And, I think being a second-round pick, it can be a tough break for these guys. And I think a lot of this can be circumstance. Like, not every team, and I think this will be the case still going forward, is equipped to handle some of the development that needs to be done. Evan.
My bad. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, no, being a second round pick is super humbling for NBA players, because especially like these young high school guys where they've been told their entire life, yeah, you're going to be the greatest. Yeah, you're going to be the next big thing. Like, I think in 1998, when these guys were drafted, it was a bit of a crossroads, because it's hard to sell teams like signing Andre Drummond to a max extension. It's hard to sell teams on drafting a high schooler. And like, Rashard Lewis is being humbled. Corleone Young is being humbled. Like, it's just an interesting case study. Like, Corleone didn't last at all in the NBA. He played 3 games for the Pistons, and then he just kind of bounced around between teams in like the International Basketball League and the Continental Basketball Association and the Australia's National Basketball League and like the G League and everything. Like, it just doesn't work out, and like, that's part of the risk with comes of gambling on these high school prospects. It's like, for every Kevin Garnett or Kobe Bryant at this point, because we haven't touched on Dwight or LBJ yet, there's so many Corleone Youngs, and there's so many players that like David Stern is trying to like discourage these players from coming out and risking everything to be an NBA player and, you know, setting themselves up for failure, that it's just, it's a shame. And, like, it's also interesting as well because, like, you look at Rashard Lewis, too. Like, Corleone Young didn't have the luxury of going to, like, a veteran squad, or, like, he did, but they weren't embraced. Like, Rashard Lewis was embraced when he went to the Supersonics. Like, Gary Payton took him under his wing. Like, the stories that they shared about, like, him playing pickup with, like, Gary Payton and the Sonics is super cool. And I think having a veteran like that, especially, or, like, in his case, like, Gary Payton was arguably, like, one of the best players for the Sonics. Like, having him in your ear all the time, like, that's huge for your development. And, like, I personally hate Rashard Lewis for what he did with the Orlando Magic to the Cavs many moons later. But, no, it's just interesting to see where he came from. And, like you said, he was promised three times. Or the Rockets had three chances to take him, and they didn't take him. And that was his hometown team, from what I remember correctly. And that's tough. And, yeah, no, it's a good cautionary tale, like, just for all these guys. Like, maybe you don't want to take this chance, because if you're a second-round pick, there is zero guarantees you're making this team. And this is in the 90s and the early 2000s, where the G League and the D League really wasn't a thing yet, so you don't even have that avenue to try and make some type of profit off playing American stateside basketball.
I'll add to that with the Rashard Lewis thing, which I think is just, like, really troubling, that, like, that you get these promises and things can break differently. I think one thing I will say that I think the Cavs do well. It's one of the things I think as an organization and their front office has done well, dating back at least to David Griffin, is I think that there is, like, a good level of trust between their leadership and players and agents. Even if there are obviously disagreements sometimes, like Kevin Love saying, like, find me, I'm rich, basically, because he's annoyed with Kobe Altman. I do feel like in the draft process, I do feel like in working with agents, you know, even if it's the 12th guy on the roster or the 15th guy on the roster, I do feel like the Cavs are good at actually talking through these things. And it's such a sign that, like, even if your draft, like, I think everyone understands that draft plans can change. And there's a ton of things going on. But when, like, a guy seemingly gets a promise that he's going to be one of your three picks, then he just slides by and it's his hometown team, like, that's weird. Yeah. And I think something that, like, to think about this in the draft is, like, these guys are also, like, this is a very big moment for a human being moment for them. And I think one of my favorite things about this chapter is how that gets highlighted here with the Rashard Lewis in the green room saga, where he just keeps being in the green room despite, you know, and after being kind of sure he was going to be a first round pick. And I think to spin this as a Cavs thing, one of the things I do think they do well is actually, like, kind of communicate with some of the stuff. And I think they're, even if they're up front with the people they're working with in a way that I think is commendable, because that doesn't always happen in this business. And it doesn't always happen in their end either. Like, they definitely make mistakes, but I think they're decently good at it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think if cell phones were a regular thing and texting was a regular thing, do you think Rashard Lewis would have texted a Houston assistant saying, trade up for me, let's wreck this league?
I mean, at the very least, like, his agent probably, it's probably a little easier to do the communication now.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, that's a Johnny Manziel reference, but yeah, no.
Kay Felder definitely texted Dan Gilbert and was like, let's wreck this league.
No, Kay Felder just had the luxury of being a short point guard that played for a school in Michigan, and that's like two for three on Dan Gilbert's checklist. If you play for Michigan State, you're three for three, and we'll be talking about that prospect soon enough, folks, so don't you worry, I'm going to save my takes for then. But, yeah. No, it's just an interesting thing. Like, I really want to pick Jonathan Abram's brain and see what he thinks now, because he probably has a better idea of it than I do, because I don't really ask about high school prospects or what teams are thinking long-term in terms of high school prospects, but this is a conversation we're going to be having relatively soon when it comes to teams being able to select high school players again. And I just kind of want to see if he has an idea of, like, is this thought process the same? Because as I stall here, I think Dwight Howard was drafted in 2008?
Something like that.
I'm still stalling here. He wore 39 for the Lakers. 2004, so I was 4 years off. But that was the last year high school players were eligible. So we're 16 years removed from high school players being eligible. So, like, that's a long gap. And I still wonder, like, maybe teams have started to sour on it again. Like, the one-and-done thing seems so silly, though, because selecting a college player that has more than 2 years tops experience on their resume is taboo for a top 10 pick, but if they have 1 year or 2 years or less, that's okay. Like, Devin Vassell, God rest his shot, was once a top 10 pick in my heart, but...
Evan's still coping, everyone.
You know, it's that meme of Wolverine looking at the photo. I look at Devin Vassell like it's a gift for me where he's loading up a shot and taking it. It's, like, effortless, and I get a little weak in the knees while laying there. But, no, it's... yeah, no, I would like to pick Abrams' brain on think, like, okay, well, is the thought process in 2020 similar to the thought process in 1998 where... Sure, there could be a high school player out there that could be the difference maker long term if you're willing to incubate and grow them, or are you going to have a ton of problems and, you know, it just doesn't work out, and then, like, you get fired because of it because you wasted a draft pick on a high schooler that amounted to nothing for you. Like, it's just interesting for me to think, like, what's going on these many years later.
Yeah, very, very fair. All right, that's going to be it for today's show. Thanks for tuning in for us as we went a little long and got a little, I would say, a little feisty about Andre Drummond, Evan.
Yeah, just a little bit. I'm just scratching.
Why don't you
my
send
nose.
Us out?
Yeah, I'll send you out, everyone. Hope you have a good weekend, everybody. Really do. Chris, I hope you have a good one as well, playing Breath of the Wild and taking some time for your mental health. Everybody else, take some time for your mental health as well. And if you do happen to go out and about, please wear your mask and practice proper social distancing. If you have not voted yet, I hope you're registered to do so, because this is a pro-voting podcast, and vote for Joe Biden if you can, if my sweet, sultry voice can sway your opinion. But, other than that, Black Lives Matter, and we will be back on Monday with our good friend, Kendon. Go Cavs.
Yeah, Monday's show, gonna be a little crazy. Tune in then.